is an old enemy of ours, but we have enemies older still. We are content to wait and watch.
He's summoning demons to him, Jace said, creating an army.
Demons, said the queen lightly, as her courtiers chattered behind her. Demons are your charge, are they not, Shadow Hunter? Is that not why you hold authority over us all? Because you are the ones who slay demons?
I'm not here to give you orders on behalf of the Clave. We came when you asked us because we thought that if you knew the truth, you'd help us.
Is that what you thought? The queen sat forward in her chair, her long hair rippling and alive. Remember, Shadow Hunter, there are those of us who chafe under the rule of the Clave. Perhaps we are tired of fighting your wars for you.
But it isn't our war alone, said Jace. Valentine hates downworlders more than he hates demons. If he defeats us, he'll go after you next.
The queen's eyes bored into him.
And when he does, said Jace, remember that it was a Shadow Hunter who warned you what was coming.
There was silence. Even the court had fallen silent, watching their lady. At last, the queen leaned back on her cushions and took a swallow from a silver chalice.
Warning me about your own parent, she said. I had thought you mortals capable of filial affection at least, and yet you seem to feel no loyalty toward Valentine, your father.
Jace said nothing. He seemed, for a change, lost for words. Sweetly, the queen went on.
Or perhaps this hostility of yours is the pretense. Love does make liars out of your kind.
But we don't love our father, said Clary, as Jace remained frighteningly silent.
We hate him. Do you?
The queen looked almost bored.
You know how the bonds of family are, my lady, said Jace, recovering his voice. They cling as tightly as vines. And sometimes, like vines, they cling tightly enough to kill.
The queen's lashes fluttered.
You would betray your own father for the sake of the Clave.
Even so, lady.
She laughed, a sound as bright and cold as icicles.
Who would have thought, she said, that Valentine's little experiments would turn on him?
Clary looked at Jace, but she could see by the expression on his face that he had no idea what the queen meant. It was Isabel who spoke.
Experiments?
The queen didn't even glance at her. Her gaze, a luminous blue, was fixed on Jace.
The fair folk are a people of secrets, she said. Our own and others. Ask your father, when next you see him, what blood runs in your veins, Jonathan.
I hadn't planned on asking him anything next time I see him, Jace said. But if you desire it, my lady, it will be done.
The queen's lips curved into a smile.
I think you are a liar, but a charming one. Charming enough that I will swear you this. Ask your father that question, and I will promise you what aid is in my power should you strike against Valentine.
Jace smiled. Your generosity is as remarkable as your loveliness, lady. Clary made a gagging noise, but the queen looked pleased.
And I think we're done here now, Jace added, rising from the cushions.
He'd set his untouched drink down earlier, beside Isabel's. They all rose after him. Isabel was already talking to Meliorn in the corner by the vine door. He looked slightly hunted.
A moment, the queen rose. One of you must remain.
Jace paused halfway to the door and turned to face her.
What do you mean?
She stretched out one hand to indicate Clary.
Once our food or drink passes mortal lips, the mortal is ours. You know that, Shadow Hunter.
Clary was stunned.
But I didn't drink any of it.
She turned to Jace.
She's lying.
Fairies don't lie, he said, confusion and dawning anxiety chasing each other across his face.
He turned back to the queen.
I'm afraid you're mistaken, lady.
Look to her fingers and tell me she didn't lick them clean.
Simon and Isabel were staring now. Clary glanced down at her hand.
Of blood, she said. One of the sprites bit my finger. It was bleeding.
She remembered the sweet taste of the blood mixed with the juice on her finger. Panicked, she moved toward the vine door and stopped as what felt like invisible hands shoved her back into the room. She turned to Jace, stricken.
It's true.
Jace's face was flushed.
I suppose I should have expected a trick like that, he said to the queen, his previous flirtatiousness gone. Why are you doing this? What do you want from us?
The queen's voice was soft as spider's fur. Perhaps I'm only curious, she said. It is not often I have young shadow hunters so close within my purview. Like us, you trace your ancestry to heaven. That intrigues me.
But unlike you, said Jace, there is nothing of hell in us.
You are mortal. You age, you die, the queen said dismissively. If that is not hell, pray tell me what is.
If you just want to study a shadow hunter, I won't be much use to you, Clary cut in.
Her hand ached where the sprite had bitten it, and she fought the urge to scream or burst into tears.
I don't know anything about shadow hunting. I hardly have any training. I'm the wrong person to pick.
On, she added silently.
For the first time, the queen looked directly at her. Clary wanted to shrink back.
In truth, Clarissa Morgenstern, you are precisely the right person.
Her eyes gleamed as she took in Clary's discomfiture.
Thanks to the changes your father worked in you, you are not like other shadow hunters. Your gifts are different.
My gifts?
Clary was bewildered.
Yours is the gift of words that cannot be spoken, the queen said to her. And your brother's is the angel's own gift. Your father made sure of it, when your brother was a child and before you were ever born.
My father never gave me anything, Clary said. He didn't even give me a name.
Jace looked as blank as Clary felt. Well, the fair folk do not lie, he said. They can be lied to. I think you have been the victim of a trick or joke, my lady. There is nothing special about myself or my sister.
How deftly you downplay your charms, said the queen with a laugh. Though you must know you are not of the usual sort of human boy, Jonathan.
She looked from Clary to Jace to Isabel. Isabel closed her mouth, which had been wide open with a snap, and back at Jace again.
Could it be that you do not know? She murmured.
I know that I will not leave my sister here in your court, said Jace. And since there is nothing to be learned from either her or myself, perhaps you could do us the favor of releasing her? Now that you've had your fun, his eyes said, though his voice was polite and cool as water.
The queen's smile was wide and terrible. What if I told you she could be freed by a kiss?
You want Jace to kiss you? Clary said, bewildered.
The queen burst out laughing, and immediately the courtiers copied her mirth. The laughter was a bizarre and inhuman mix of hoots, squeaks, and cackles, like the high shrieking of animals in pain.
Despite his charms, the queen said, that kiss will not free the girl.
The four looked at each other, startled.
I could kiss Meliorn, suggested Isabel.
Nor that, nor anyone of my court.
Meliorn moved away from Isabel, who looked at her companions and threw up her hands.
I'm not kissing any of you, she said firmly, just so it's official.
That hardly seems necessary, Simon said, if a kiss is all.
He moved toward Clary, who was frozen in surprise. When he took her by the elbows, she had to fight the urge to push him away. Not that she hadn't kissed Simon before, but this would have been a peculiar situation even if kissing him were something she was entirely comfortable doing, which it wasn't. And yet it was the logical answer, wasn't it? Without being able to help it, she cast a quick look over her shoulder at Jace and saw him scowl.
No, said the queen in a voice like tinkling crystal. That is not what I want either.
Isabel rolled her eyes. Oh, for the angel's sake, look, if there's no other way of getting out of this, I'll kiss Simon. I've done it before. It wasn't that bad.
Thanks, said Simon. That's very flattering.
Alas, said the queen of the Seely Court.
Her expression was sharp with a sort of cruel delight, and Clary wondered if it weren't a kiss she wanted so much as simply to watch them all squirm in discomfort.
I'm afraid that won't do either.
Well, I'm not kissing the mundane, said Jace. I'd rather stay down here and rot. Forever, said Simon. Forever is an awfully long time.
Jace raised his eyebrows.
I knew it, he said. You want to kiss me, don't you?
Simon threw up his hands in exasperation.
Of course not, but if... I guess it's true what they say, observed Jace. There are no straight men in the trenches.
That's atheists, jackass, said Simon furiously.
There are no atheists in the trenches.
Well, this is all very amusing, said the queen coolly, leaning forward. The kiss that will free the girl is the kiss that she most desires.
The cruel delight in her face and voice had sharpened, and her words seemed to stab into Clary's ears like needles.
Only that and nothing more.
Simon looked as if she had hit him. Clary wanted to reach out to him, but she stood frozen to the spot, too horrified to move.
Why are you doing this? Jace demanded.
I rather thought I was offering you a boon.
Jace flushed, but said nothing. He avoided looking at Clary. Simon said,
That's ridiculous. They're brother and sister.
The queen shrugged a delicate twitch of her shoulders.
Desire is not always lessened by disgust, nor can it be bestowed like a favor to those most deserving of it. And as my words bind my magic, so you can know the truth. If she doesn't desire his kiss, she won't be free.
Simon said something angrily, but Clary didn't hear him. Her ears were buzzing as if a swarm of angry bees were trapped inside her head. Simon whirled around, looking furious, and said,
You don't have to do this, Clary. It's a trick.
Not a trick, said Jace. A test.
Well, I don't know about you, Simon, said Isabel, her voice edged, but I'd like to get Clary out of here.
Like you'd kiss Alec, Simon said. Just because the queen of the Seelie court asked you to?
Sure I would. Isabel sounded annoyed. If the other option was being stuck in the Seelie court forever, who cares anyway? It's just a kiss.
That's right.
It was Jace. Clary saw him at the blurred edge of her vision as he moved toward her and put a hand on her shoulder, turning her face to him.
It's just a kiss, he said.
And though his tone was harsh, his hands were inexplicably gentle. She let him turn her, looked up at him. His eyes were very dark, perhaps because it was so dim down here in the court, perhaps because of something else. She could see her reflection in each of his dilated pupils, a tiny image of herself inside his eyes. He said,
You can close your eyes and think of England if you like.
I've never even been to England, she said, but she shut her eyelids. She could feel the dank heaviness of her clothes, cold and itchy against her skin, and the cloying sweet air of the cave colder yet, and the weight of Jace's hands on her shoulders, the only things that were warm. And then he kissed her. She felt the brush of his lips, light at first, and her own opened automatically beneath the pressure. Almost against her will, she felt herself go fluid and pliant, stretching upward to twine her arms around his neck, the way that a sunflower twists toward light. His arms slid around her, his hands knotting in her hair, and the kiss stopped being gentle and became fierce, all in a single moment, like tinder flaring into a blaze. Clary heard a sound like a sigh rush through the court, all around them, a wave of noise. But it meant nothing, was lost in the rush of her blood through her veins, the dizzying sense of weightlessness in her body. Jace's hands moved from her hair, slid down her spine. She felt the hard press of his palms against her shoulder blades, and then he pulled away, gently disengaging himself, drawing her hands away from his neck and stepping back. For a moment, Clary thought she might fall. She felt as if something essential had been torn away from her, an arm or a leg, and she stared at Jace in blank astonishment. What did he feel? Did he feel nothing? She didn't think she could bear it if he felt nothing. He looked back at her, and when she saw the look on his face, she saw his eyes at Renwick's, when he had watched the portal that had separated him from his home shatter into a thousand irretrievable pieces. He held her gaze for a split second, then looked away from her, the muscles in his throat working. His hands were clenched into fists at his sides.
Was that good enough? He called,
turning to face the queen and the courtiers behind her.
Did that entertain you?
The queen had a hand across her mouth, half covering a smile.
We are quite entertained, she said, but not, I think, so much as the both of you.
I can only assume, said Jace, that mortal emotions amuse you because you have none of your own.
The smile slipped from her mouth at that.
Easy, Jace, said Isabel. She turned to Clary. Can you leave now? Are you free?
Clary went to the door, and was not surprised to find no resistance barring her way. She stood with her hand among the vines and turned to Simon. He was staring at her as if he'd never seen her before.
"We should go," she said, "before it's too late."
"It's already too late," he said.
Meliorn led them from the Seely Court and deposited them back in the park, all without speaking a single word. Clary thought his back looked stiff and disapproving. He turned away after they'd splashed out of the pond, without even a goodbye for Isabel, and disappeared back into the wavering reflection of the moon. Isabel watched him go with a scowl. "He is so broken up with." Jace made a sound like a choked laugh and flipped the collar of his wet jacket. They were all shivering. The cold night smelled like dirt and plants and human modernity. Clary almost thought she could scent the iron on the air. The ring of city surrounding the park sparked with fierce lights, ice blue, cold green, hot red, and the pond lapped quietly against its dirt shores. The moon's reflection had moved to the pond's far edge and quivered there as if it were afraid of them.
"We'd better get back."
Isabel drew her still wet coat closer around her shoulders, "before we freeze to death."
"It's going to take forever to get back to Brooklyn," Clary said. "Maybe we should take a taxi."
"Or we could just go to the Institute," suggested Isabel. At Jace's look, she said quickly, "No one's there anyway. They're all in the Bone City looking for clues. It'll just take a second to stop by and grab your clothes, change into something dry. Besides, the Institute is still your home, Jace."
"It's fine," Jace said, to Isabel's evident surprise. "There's something I need from my room there anyway."
Clary hesitated. "I don't know. I might just grab a cab back with Simon."
Maybe if they spent a little time alone together, she could explain to him what had happened down in the Seely Court, and that it wasn't what he thought.
Jace had been examining his watch for water damage. Now he looked at her, eyebrows raised.
"That might be a little difficult," he said, "seeing that he left already."
"He what?"
Clary whirled around and stared. Simon was gone. The three of them were alone by the pond. She ran a little way up the hill and shouted his name. In the distance, she could just see him, striding purposefully away along the concrete path that led out of the park and onto the avenue. She called out to him again, but he didn't turn around.
Chapter 9. And Death Shall Have No Dominion. Isabel had been telling the truth. The Institute was entirely deserted. Almost entirely, anyway. Max was asleep on the red couch in the foyer when they came in. His glasses were slightly askew, and he clearly hadn't meant to fall asleep. There was a book open on the floor where he'd dropped it, and his sneakered feet dangled over the couch's edge in a manner that looked as if it were probably uncomfortable. Clary's heart went out to him immediately. He reminded her of Simon at the age of 9 or 10, all glasses and awkward blinking and ears.
"Max is like a cat. He can sleep anywhere."
Jace reached down and plucked the glasses from Max's face, setting them down on a squat inlaid table nearby. There was a look on his face Clary had never seen before, a fierce protective gentleness that surprised her.
"Oh, leave this stuff alone. You'll just get mud on it," said Isabel crossly, unbuttoning her wet coat.
Her dress clung to her long torso, and water darkened the thick leather belt around her waist. The glitter of her coiled whip was just visible where the handle protruded from the edge of the belt. She was frowning.
"I can feel a cold coming on," she said. "I'm going to take a hot shower."
Jace watched her disappear down the corridor with a sort of reluctant admiration.
"Sometimes she reminds me of the poem. Isabel, Isabel, didn't worry. Isabel didn't scream or scurry."
"Do you ever feel like screaming?" Clary asked him.
"Some of the time."
Jace shrugged off his wet coat and hung it on the peg next to Isabel's.
"She's right about the hot shower, though. I could certainly use one."
"I don't have anything to change into," Clary said, suddenly wanting a few moments to herself.
Her fingers itched to dial Simon's number on her cell phone, find out if he was all right.
"I'll just wait for you here."
"Don't be stupid. I'll lend you a t-shirt."
His jeans were soaked and hung low on his hip bones, showing a strip of pale, tattooed skin between the denim and the edge of his t-shirt. Clary looked away.
"I don't think..."
"Come on." His tone was firm. "There's something I want to show you anyway."
Surreptitiously, Clary checked the screen on her phone as she followed Jace down the hall to his room. Simon hadn't tried to call. Ice seemed to crystallize inside her chest. Until 2 weeks ago, it had been years since she and Simon had had a fight. Now he seemed to be mad at her all the time. Jace's room was just as she remembered it, neat as a pin and bare as a monk's cell. There was nothing about the room that told you anything about Jace. No posters on the wall, no books stacked on the night table. Even the duvet on the bed was plain white. He went to the dresser and pulled a folded long-sleeved blue t-shirt out of a drawer. He tossed it to Clary.
"That one shrank in the wash," he said. "It'll probably still be big on you, but..."
He shrugged.
"I'm going to shower. Yell if you need anything."
She nodded, holding the shirt across her chest as if it were a shield. He looked as if he were about to say something else, but apparently thought better of it. With another shrug, he disappeared into the bathroom, closing the door firmly behind him. Clary sank down onto the bed, the shirt across her lap, and pulled her phone out of her pocket. She dialed Simon's number. After 4 rings, it went to voicemail.
"Hi, you've reached Simon. Either I'm away from the phone or I'm avoiding you. Leave me a message and..." "What are you doing?"
Jace stood in the open doorway of the bathroom. Water ran loudly in the shower behind him, and the bathroom was half full of steam. He was shirtless and barefoot, damp jeans riding low on his hips, showing the deep indentations above his hip bones, as if someone had pressed their fingers to the skin there. Clary snapped her phone closed and dropped it onto the bed.
"Nothing, checking the time."
"There's a clock next to the bed," Jace pointed out. "You were calling the mundane, weren't you?"
"His name is Simon." Clary wadded Jace's shirt into a ball between her fists. "And you don't have to be such a bastard about him all the time. He's helped you out more than once." Jace's eyes were lidded, thoughtful. The bathroom was rapidly filling with steam, making his hair curl more. He said,
"And now you feel guilty because he's run off. I wouldn't bother calling him. I'm sure he's avoiding you."
Clary didn't try to keep the anger out of her voice. "And you know this because you and he are so close?"
"I know it because I saw the look on his face before he took off," Jace said. "You didn't. You weren't looking at him, but I was."
Clary raked her still dank hair out of her eyes. Her clothes itched where they clung to her skin, and she suspected she smelled like the bottom of a pond, and she couldn't stop seeing Simon's face when he looked at her in the Sealy court, as if he hated her.
"It's your fault," she said suddenly, rage gathering around her heart. "You shouldn't have kissed me like that."
He had been leaning against the doorframe. Now he stood up straight.
"How should I have kissed you? Is there another way you like it?"
"No."
Her hands trembled in her lap. They were cold, white, wrinkled by water. She laced her fingers together to stop the shaking.
"I just don't want to be kissed by you."
"It didn't seem to me that either of us had a choice in the matter."
"That's what I don't understand," Clary burst out. "Why did she make you kiss me? The queen, I mean, why force us to do that? What pleasure could she possibly have gotten out of it?"
"You heard what the queen said. She thought she was doing me a favor."
"That's not true."
"It is true. How many times do I have to tell you? The fair folk don't lie."
Clary thought of what Jace had said back at Magnus's. "They'll find out whatever it is you want most in the world and give it to you, with a sting in the tail of the gift that will make you regret you ever wanted it in the first place."
"Then she was wrong."
"She wasn't wrong." Jace's tone was bitter. "She saw the way I looked at you, and you at me, and Simon at you, and she played us like the instruments we are to her."
"I don't look at you," Clary whispered.
"What?"
"I said I don't look at you."
She released the hands that had been clasped together in her lap. There were red marks where her fingers had gripped each other.
"At least I try not to."
His eyes were narrowed, just a glint of gold showing through the lashes, and she remembered the first time she had seen him and how he had reminded her of a lion, golden and deadly.
"Why not?
Why do you think?"
Her words were almost soundless, barely a whisper.
"Then why?" His voice shook. "Why all this with Simon? Why keep pushing me away, not letting me near you?"
"Because it's impossible," she said.
And the last word came out as a sort of wail, despite her efforts at control.
You know that as well as I do.
Because you're my sister, Jace said. She nodded without speaking.
Possibly, said Jace. And because of that, you've decided your old friend Simon makes a useful distraction?
It's not like that, she said. I love Simon.
Like you love Luke, said Jace. Like you love your mother.
No.
Her voice was as cold and pointed as an icicle.
Don't tell me what I feel.
A small muscle jumped at the side of his mouth.
I don't believe you.
Clary stood up. She couldn't meet his eyes, so instead she fixed her gaze on the thin, star-shaped scar on his right shoulder, a memory of some old injury. This life of scars and killing, Hodge had said once. You have no part in it.
Jace, she said, why are you doing this to me?
Because you're lying to me, and you're lying to yourself.
Jace's eyes were blazing, and even though his hands were stuffed into his pockets, she could see that they were knotted into fists. Something inside Clary cracked and broke, and words came pouring out.
What do you want me to tell you? The truth?
The truth is that I love Simon like I should love you, and I wish he was my brother and you weren't, but I can't do anything about that, and neither can you. Or do you have some ideas since you're so goddamn smart? Jace sucked a breath in, and she realized he had never expected her to say what she'd just said, not in a million years. The look on his face said as much. She scrambled to regain her composure.
Jace, I'm sorry. I didn't mean...
No, you're not sorry. Don't be sorry.
He moved toward her, almost tripping over his feet. Jace, who never stumbled, never tripped over anything, never made an ungraceful move. His hands came up to cup her face. She felt the warmth of his fingertips, millimeters from her skin, knew she ought to pull away, but stood frozen, staring up at him.
You don't understand, he said. His voice shook. I've never felt this way about anyone. I didn't think I could. I thought the way I grew up, my father.
To love is to destroy, she said numbly. I remember.
I thought that part of my heart was broken, he said.
And there was a look on his face as he spoke as if he were surprised to hear himself saying these words, saying my heart.
Forever. But you,
Jace, don't.
She reached up and covered his hand with hers, folding his fingers into her own.
It's pointless.
That's not true.
There was desperation in his voice.
If we both feel the same way.
It doesn't matter what we feel. There's nothing we can do.
She heard her voice as if a stranger were speaking. Remote, miserable.
Where would we go to be together? How could we live?
We could keep it a secret.
People would find out. And I don't want to lie to my family. Do you?
His reply was bitter.
What family? The Lightwoods hate me anyway.
No, they don't. And I could never tell Luke. And my mother? What if she woke up? What would we say to her? This, what we want, it would be sickening to everyone we care about.
Sickening?
He dropped his hands from her face as if she'd pushed him away. He sounded stunned.
What we feel, what I feel, it's sickening to you?
She caught her breath at the look on his face.
Maybe, she said in a whisper. I don't know.
Then you should have said that to begin with.
Jace.
But he was gone from her, his expression shut and locked like a door. It was hard to believe he'd ever looked at her another way.
I'm sorry I said anything then.
His voice was stiff, formal.
I won't be kissing you again. You can count on that.
Clary's heart did a slow, purposeless somersault as he moved away from her, plucked a towel off the top of the dresser, and headed back toward the bathroom.
But, Jace, what are you doing?
Finishing my shower. And if you've made me run through all the hot water, I'll be very annoyed.
He stepped into the bathroom, kicking the door shut behind him.
Clary collapsed onto the bed and stared up at the ceiling. It was as blank as Jace's face had been before he turned his back on her. Rolling over, she realized she was lying on top of his blue shirt. It even smelled like him, like soap and smoke and coppery blood.
curling around it like she'd once curled around her favorite blanket when she was very small, she closed her eyes.